Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Monday night edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I'm joined by a first-timer back in my home state, Christopher Walt, known on Twitter as just Walt of Lakers Outsiders. Chris Walt, whichever one we didn't talk about before we got started. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. So what do you go by? What do you go by, man?
Man, Walt, Chris. some people call me by my Twitter handle. It all depends. It really don't matter, to be honest.
So I saw you went to Albany State. Is that right?
Yeah, man. Went to Albany State down in Southwest Georgia. Good old Golden Rams.
Okay. Do you know Rashard Lofton?
Rashard Lofton. Did he play a sport?
He played basketball.
Yes.
I went to high school with him. That's cool. He's also a big Lakers fan. He moved to Albany State. He started like Waycross, and then I think he moved on to Albany State. But yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, and Bobby Glover. I think I also.
Yep.
Do you know him too?
Yep, know him too. When you said first, I was like, "Yeah, I heard that name before, and I know they play a sport." So yeah,
that's cool, man. Small world. Well, thanks for doing this, man. I'm excited because there's a lot of NBA stuff that is going on right now that I wanted to bounce around with you this evening. Some things I want to touch on: the Sixers not making a major move before the deadline. If there actually is a buyout market problem brewing in the NBA, and then some post-trade deadline risers and sinkers. I have my list. More risers, surprisingly enough. I feel like sometimes I'm a little too negative sometimes, and I actually am pretty positive about a lot of people right now. So that makes the playoff time a lot more fun, I think, if I'm pretty optimistic about a lot of these teams. I don't know where you're at, but we'll find out. First thing, the Sixers. For them not to ultimately give up a lot of capital, which seems like that would have been the case. It depends on who you believe. It depends on if you believe Masai. It depends on if you believe what rumors were about the package. It depends on what you believe. Like, we may never know why Kyle Lowry ultimately remained in Toronto past the deadline. I'm going to guess that it was probably a little bit of everything.
Yep.
I think this also just means that Daryl Morey really wants to see what Tobias, Joel, and Ben Simmons do in the playoffs with this group. They're the number one team in the East, and the way he looks at it maybe is that, like, we have a bunch of depth, we have a bunch of good pieces, Joel is playing at an MVP level, let's not rock this too much. Let's not throw a potential wrench, because Kyle Lowry is awesome, but they are going to have to fundamentally change how they play basketball if they have to acclimate Kyle Lowry into this rotation. And what they're doing right now works. They have an identity. They know who they are. Maybe that is really what it is. And Tobias, just being LA Clipper Tobias has been great for them. what do you make of the Sixers not making a major move at the deadline?
Well, for me, I think it came down to the cost of doing business with the Raptors and what the Raptors, you know, like you said, the package is, it's a lot of different, you know, iterations of the package that they wanted for Kyle Lowry. But the one that I think that was on the table was Tyrese Maxey, Matisse Thybulle, and then two first rounders. And that is a lot to pay for a 35-year-old Kyle Lowry with him going into free agency and, you know, him looking for an extension when he did, you know, get traded. And they were able to go and get George Hill for way cheaper and bring in another veteran with a lot of playoff experience. George Hill basically been in the playoffs every year of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Great three-point shooter, which adds to the arsenal they already have with Danny Green shooting well this season, Tobias Harris shooting well, Seth Curry as well. And they're going to add that into their defensive identity because George Hill is someone who can come in and just contribute to your team defense. And I think at the end of the day, it was all about just the price that the Raptors wanted everybody to play who they were negotiating with, whether it was the Miami Heat, whether it was the Sixers, with the Lakers, and whoever else, you know, entertained the package before the trade deadline that we didn't get to hear about. So I think bringing in Lowry would have definitely helped them because the challenge for them, like you just talked about, is getting Joel Embiid going and what is Ben Simmons going to do about not being able to space the floor in the playoffs, and can Ben Simmons get them into their offense in the half court and get the flow of the game going for them, especially now they basically put all their faith into him. So that's going to be the biggest challenge that they face going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's a fair gamble because I don't think they really lose anything if they reach the Eastern Conference Finals and get knocked out by the Nets in a brutal six-game series or something like that. Or we get to see, like, I want to see what happens with the Nets with the way they're configured versus the Sixers, because I don't know what the Nets throw at Joel Embiid. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I know where Ben Simmons is going. I know what they're going to do with Joel Embiid. I know who's going to be on Tobias. I have no idea what the Nets are going to do about Joel Embiid. I'm dying to see that. That's what I hope we get in the Eastern Conference Finals, but we'll see. Tobias is just really good, and I just don't know if people are paying attention to what he has been, because we've seen this before in flashes, and this is what he was in LA with Gallinari when he was that lead point forward before Kawhi, before all that. He was fun. It was him and Boban, and they were good, and he was really good at just navigating the pick and roll. He's really good at cutting. He's really good at just doing the little things. Like, he's a really good rebounder. He's a really good shooter. He's a really good passer. He just does everything you want to do for this group as a lead ball handler. So maybe they were like, we don't need Kyle Lowry because we're going to bet on Tobias this year. He's earned the right to try and be a co-closer with Joel. And Ben just, Ben is so interesting and so much fun to watch. And Seth Curry just shooting lights out, and Shake Milton has just been really good off the bench for them. He's a really good backup, and Furkan just finding open threes from Ben Simmons and Tobias just happens every game. The Sixers just work. So when you watch it, you're like, they are just a regular season machine, but they also just have maybe the favorite for the MVP. And it's just like, maybe that this is enough. Maybe they don't need a Kyle Lowry to get over the top, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, you got Shake Milton and you got Seth Curry, and you don't want to, especially in this kind of season, have to build on the fly when you're talking about bringing someone in and basically shifting out starters, because Danny Green was also a part of that package too that was going to go out. So, you know, it's hard to make that up on the fly during this kind of season, and you might as well just keep what you got. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Number one in the East, you just got to get Embiid healthy, and then you're back in business.
I agree. I want to see what it looks like, and I'm really fascinated to see. Do you believe that there is a buyout problem brewing in basketball? Because there was a good piece today, and I can tell by you're laughing that you're not a believer, because some small market GMs are reportedly upset, per Howard Beck's good piece in SI today. The thing about this is, it sounds like bad faith. Like, I don't know about you, but I have found myself way more annoyed at the Al Horford situation in OKC, but also I was more annoyed at just the Cavs being able to sit Drummond while they found a trade, and like the Pistons sitting Blake. Like, that is more of a just slap in the face than, yeah. And I'm sure these guys want to sit and rest and everything else, but like, man, that bothers me more than these guys getting bought out and then going to contenders. And like, they're worried about the big markets and all that kind of stuff, but I'm like, you're a Lakers guy. Like, Drummond is not going to be the reason whether or not you win a title this season. Like, he's going to help or maybe hurt, or like, chances are he might just not move the needle all that much. Like, if it's him or Boogie or whoever, like, I don't know if any of these guys are JaVale again. Like, I'm not certain that it really moves the needle, and especially in Brooklyn. Like, Blake and LaMarcus Aldridge are not swinging a title in Brooklyn. That's just not reality. So if the buyout market was like the Wizards bought out Bradley Beal, maybe then I would be like, yeah, this is insane. Like, what is happening here? Mm-hmm. But these are aging veterans, or in Drummond's case, guys who are not worth their salary. They are players that, like, just they're rotation guys. They're not
buyouts for a reason.
Yeah.
But for me, looking at the piece, I know it sounds like this is going to be a real point of contention in the CBA.
Yeah.
Because they want to, put these different, stipulations into the whole buyout situation where we're talking draft compensation. One of the things I've seen that they talked about doing, trying to push the buyout deadline up before the trade deadline, cap exceptions. Like you said, all of these things just seem like, a little bitter. Mm-hmm. By the small markets, no disrespect, but like you said, it's not like that there's world beaters that's getting, pushed into the market. These are people that they're bought out for a reason. Either the money isn't, identical to what they're contributing to whatever team they're getting bought out from, or it's an aging veteran, and both of these, two sides, the player and the team, come to this agreement and say, hey, we want to go in one direction. We want you to go into another direction. We want to put you in the best position possible by allowing you to, choose your own fate, choose your own situation for the rest of your career. And for me, I think, what was I going to say? I think for me, when you're talking about benching players while you're trying to find a trade situation, I think a lot of times as fans, we forget about the actual on-court aspect that you're taking away from these players, where they can't stay into game shape. So when they do get bought out, these are things that can affect them physically as far as, how is their health going to be when they get to the destination they want to go to. Not being able to, pick up on schemes as far as playing other teams from night to night and getting familiar with your opponent. And then, just doing the basic stuff as far as running sets for a team, and most NBA teams run like similar sets. So it's all about rhythm, and they miss out on that when you do say, hey, we're going to put you on a shelf until we find a situation that works for you. So I think they're going to have to find a happy medium with that. And I agree with you there. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I definitely think it should be something that's looked into as, the buyout becomes a thing or continues to be a thing for the NBA.
Yeah, I think this is a lot about nothing. We'll see what happens in the CBA, but like, this is not a real thing. There's a lot more issues, I think, even with like James Harden, who we haven't talked about, like the way he forced his way out of Houston and got to Brooklyn. That's way more problematic to the league, the health of the league, than Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge winding up in Brooklyn. It's really interesting to see how people respond, because I've had casual sports fans, friends. I don't know if this has been the case for you. I'm sure when you're just like talking basketball with casuals, that you're like, they'll be like, oh, how is this fair? Like, how do they get Blake and LaMarcus? And you're like, well, I mean, Nicholas Claxton is probably better, and Jeff Green's probably going to close at five. And it's like, they're just names. Those are guys you remember. But it's like, no, this is not a thing. I promise. It doesn't really matter. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Do you have a major problem with what the Thunder are doing? They just extended Moses Brown. I think he got a 19-year contract for $2 million for playing well in OKC. Did you see that contract? It's like 4 years, $6 million. I don't think I've seen that in the NBA in just, 20 years? What is this contract?
Yeah, that's okay. You did. You had a great game. I would like to see you, you know, make a little bit of the beginning of some life changing money. So let's put a deal on the table. But we're gonna keep for ourselves some flexibility in case we get to where we think we will go in the future. So, you know, we need to cut you. This deal is easier just to, you know, cut bait on. So that's what that kind of deal looked like to me.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like that. Moses Brown looks like he's going to be a player, though, so I'm okay with it.
I think, yeah, I think so.
But we'll see. We'll see. The Thunder have, I think, what? Isn't it something crazy? I want to say, do they have 24 picks in the next three? Like, it's something bizarre. Like, a lot of these guys, I don't even know who they're going to stick
with.
They have
all the picks.
They have all the picks, and you can't do that. Like, they're going to have to eventually trade seven of them for Bradley Beal. Like, that's coming. Like, yeah. They don't have – you just can't build a team that way. So we'll see what happens in OKC, but it really does bother me because Al Horford could have helped a lot of contenders, and for them not to play him down the stretch, like Al Horford's not going to cost you wins. Like you're still going to lose games if you give Al Horford 24 minutes a night with Shea. Like that's not going to be the difference between you beating the Clippers on a random Tuesday. Like that's where teams just overthink this stuff. Where I'm like, why sit him? Like, if you're Cleveland, who cares? Just keep playing Drummond, like, whatever. I don't understand that at all. This is my favorite part of this podcast, Walt. I really want to talk about the post-NBA trade deadline, risers and fallers. When you look at the rosters, you look at where everybody is, who for you, you can go first. Who do you have as the risers post-trade deadline?
Well, the first team I want to start off with is the Nuggets, just getting Aaron Gordon, getting JaVale McGee, and I think they got Ian Clark as well. They got way more athletic in the front court. You just brought in a guy, especially when you're looking at the West and who you got to go through in the West. You brought in a guy you can kind of just plug in and just let him run wild. And then, you know, Jokic and Jamal Murray, they'll do the heavy lifting down the stretch. I think that's definitely one of the risers. The Bulls getting Nikola Vucevic, bringing in a all-star paired with Zach LaVine. That's major. And they got a couple of other pieces, too, to make this late run and try to either get into the play-in or, you know, secure a seed so they don't have to be in the play-in tournament out east. And I got a surprise team.
Okay.
Well, let me finish off, and then I'll give you my surprise team last. Obviously, the Heat. Mm-hmm. You know, getting Victor Oladipo and Imaja Bijelinka. And, you know, they were hot on the trail for LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't know what happened, but, you know, they almost got him. But, you know, with them getting healthy and then adding these two big pieces, definite riser in the East, and we're going to see them get back to where they were last year. My surprise team is the Houston Rockets were a riser.
Riser.
I will call him a winner. I won't call him a riser. Let's call him a winner.
Okay, make the case, because this, I did not, I was not expecting this. Okay. Houston, yeah. A riser. I like this. Mm-hmm.
So for me, I do agree that Houston did not get back the appropriate assets for moving somebody like James Harden and then, you know, moving somebody like Victor Oladipo. They got a few pieces, but nothing like I would have expected, considering the success that Houston has had on the margins over the years and also just building on the fly and being like one of the best teams in the NBA and turning things around. But for them, I think a lot of people, rightfully so, like I said, they should make a big deal about them not getting a lot of assets. But at the end of the day, Houston wants to tank. And with them moving somebody like Victor Oladipo, even though he was in and out of the lineup, when you make yourself talent deficient like that and you're trying to tank, then, you know, that's what you're going to get. So they just put themselves another step closer to possibly, you know, the Cade Cunningham sweepstakes or UM Mobley, Jalen Suggs, or whoever they want to take with that pick. Or, you know, if they want to take that pick, if they feel like they may want to, you know, try to contend or build, you know, contender next year, our playoff team next year, you know, maybe they want to entertain a trade, man, and throw that pick out as a sweetener with somebody with, you know, Christian Wood, maybe. Who knows? You just can't tell with the Rockets. So I think they were a winner at the trade deadline for making themselves worse. and just making sure that they are going to be in the thick of the lottery and have a chance to get that number one pick next year.
Oh man. I think it goes back to like their hands were forced. Like they got screwed by it, the Harden stuff. Like that was something you couldn't really prepare for. Victor Oladipo just being like, yeah, I'm good. Cause they didn't want to sign up for 4 years of Oladipo. Christian Wood's been really good for them. I just feel really bad for Steven Silas because there's no way he's getting through this. Like, that's what sucks, is we look at what happened with Floyd Pierce in Atlanta. We look at what happens around the league, is you don't really get to see the rebuild through in most areas. Most teams do not give you the Brett Brown, like, 6 years. The losing just starts to wear on teams. And the Rockets are going to be bad, as you illustrated, for several years. Like, there's no way around it. And just, I don't know, man. I just feel bad because I think he's going to be a really good coach. And I thought he was doing really well with a bad situation after the Harden trade because Oladipo, Wall, Christian Wood, like that group was playing really well. I don't know what this looks like in 2 years from now for him. I have some real doubts that this is going to be something that he can get through. But I hope that is the case because I think he really deserves a shot and I think he could be really good for them long term if they let him see it through. I guess it also just depends on what you think about Victor Oladipo, because I have the Heat in my risers as well. They're my number one risers because I think Miami with Oladipo, and now that they're circling the wagons when it comes to Bradley Beal, and they were going to circle the wagons on Giannis before he re-signed in Milwaukee. But Miami's just coming. Like, they're the 8 seed right now, and Boston added Evan Fournier, and I think Boston will be fine too because I think they're going to get healthier, and I think Kimba, as the season goes on, like, I think them getting less bigs and getting more playmakers and getting more shooters is going to ultimately help them. But Miami getting Oladipo is just, like, one of those where I don't think it's going to matter in the regular season. I just think in a 7-game series, like, if Miami gets matched up with, like, I don't even look. Not the Nets. That's like a doomsday situation for them because they're losing that series. And I think right now, if I'm looking at the standings, yeah, they're the 8 seed. If they can get in that like 6-5 zone, like, or even the Bucks, like, that's a nightmare for the Bucks. If they get Jimmy, they get Bam, and they get Victor Oladipo in a 7-game series, like that is going to be a nightmare. And just seeing Oladipo and Holiday go back and forth will be fun. I don't know. I think this group, getting off Kelly Olynyk, getting more shooting, getting more just upside. Like, Victor Oladipo is just the best upside play there is because he's not healthy. And Miami, we know how they are with these vets and what they can do with these guys. It will take some of the burden off Tyler Hero, who's had a really bad year too. I don't know. I just really like where the Heat are going, and I think they're going to get back on track. I think they won their last game. They're 4-6 in their last 10, but I'm not as worried about Miami because I think the Hornets, Knicks, and Hawks all in front of them are all going to fall and fall soon because Indiana gets Caris LeVert back. They didn't trade Miles Turner. Sabonis is still there. TJ Warren being out for the season stinks for them, but keeping Brogdon, like, I just look at this roster and I'm like, they didn't move any pieces and they get Caris LeVert back. Like, I think they're going to sneak back into this, and I would not be surprised if they're a playoff team, at the very worst, a play-in team. The Clippers getting Rondo won't matter in the regular season, but Lou not playing in crunch time anyway and finding someone who is more of a facilitator for Kawhi and Paul George, I think will pay dividends for them. So I think they're a sneaky winner, just we won't see it yet. The Kings keeping Harrison Barnes, because I think he's actually really good with this group, and I think his timeline's closer to De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton than people know. And the Nuggets getting Aaron Gordon, because I don't know who Aaron Gordon is as a player yet. I don't know if he can play winning basketball. He looked good last night in the Hawks game watching that. But we'll see. We'll see what Aaron Gordon is as a fourth option on a contender. Do we leave anybody off of the risers, Walt?
I think we got everybody covered, man. I think we got everybody covered.
You don't have your Lakers as a riser.
Yeah, they're not done yet, man. You know, we have to wait till after April the 9th and see
who do you want them to add? if after Drummond, like when you think about the rest of this rotation and what they need, what else do you want? Is there someone in mind that you have in mind right now?
I would love to see them add Otto Porter Jr. if he hits the market. I think that would give them the size that they need on the perimeter. Somebody else who, you know, has a pulse to, you know, dribble, drive, and set up offense for themselves-ish. And it's just all about the size at the end of the day. And I think a long stretch is bringing back Avery Bradley. I mean, anytime you hear a name get floated out with the Lakers, it's not at all, you know, it's not ironic at all. It's for a purpose. So I wouldn't mind them seeing them add either of those two.
I don't hate the Avery Bradley thing. Him just, remember how much things have changed for him? Like going into the bubble, like there were real conversations that like the Lakers losing Bradley for the bubble could cost him a title. Like that was a conversation because of how good he was playing with this group, that like them losing Bradley was like a problem that KCP just turned into another level, which saved them in a lot of ways, and Caruso being really good too. Bradley really is an interesting option there. I don't hate that. Losers. Utah Jazz is my number one loser. This might be surprising. I think they're going to run into the problem against the Clippers or the Lakers or maybe even the Nuggets, where Royce O'Neal and Joe Ingles in the wing is just going to cost them. Them not upgrading the wing spot with Bojan and that group, they're a great shooting team. They've solved pick and roll basketball. They've solved pick and drop coverage in basketball. Like they are fluent in that. Rudy Gobert knows how to do both of those things extremely well. Donovan Mitchell knows how to do both those things extremely well. Conley's playing at an all-star level, but they're going to run into elite wings. And when they run into those elite wings, I don't think they have the versatility to be able to withstand those kinds of squads. I just don't. And I think them betting on this group on the wings front is going to cost them what has been a special season. I think they should have sacrificed some of their depth for those guys, because they're not playing Clarkson, Conley, and Mitchell in crunch time. Like, it's not happening. So I don't know, man. I think they're happy, kind of like the Sixers at the top of their standings, but like I don't know. Like the amount of money that I would bet on the Clippers or Lakers being the Jazz in a 7-game series, just, I don't know. I think they should have taken a bigger swing, because you don't know if you're going to have a season like this again from Conley, and this was a huge opportunity for them, and I think it's going to bother them. What do you think?
Man, yeah, that they could have stood to bring in maybe like one more big. And I think they did get Matt Thomas, which is just, you know, another fringe shooter that they added to the rotation. But they could have stood to bring in one more big. My other losers, and this is one we disagree on. I think the Clippers were losers. But
interesting.
I will also put them in the same camp with the Lakers, because, you know, they're going to be sniffing around the April the 9th buyout deadline too. And they'll have a chance to possibly add in a little bit more scoring, because if they got Rondo to be the playmaker, unless they completely trust Reggie Jackson, then I could see them possibly going at their score. Austin Rivers, he hit the market, and it was said that he was going to the Bucks, but, you know, the Bucks went with Jeff Teague, and I'm not sure if he's still not going. But that would be an interesting ad for the Clippers, somebody who can handle the ball, have a little shot creation, a good defender, good strong defender at the two guard, can guard point guards as well. And in some situations, depending on who's playing the three for the other squad, he can guard down and play a little bit of the three, depending on who it is. I put emphasis on that. So I did have him tagged as a loser, but I'll wait to see what happens by April the 9th. And then the Warriors, man, I really thought that they could get off of Kelly Oubre's deal. Maybe they want to bring him back next year and, you know, kind of keep what they have together. They did get rid of that's such a horrible way to phrase it. They traded Brad Wanamaker, but, you know, they didn't get much back. And I thought that they would do more at trade deadline. I heard that they were in the market for Danny Green as well, and, you know, that didn't materialize. So And I don't think
the
they
Sixers
had
need
anything
him.
left after that. Right. That's so strange to me that he was on the market, and he you know, he had a rough playoffs last year, but you know,
I
he
seem
found
to recall
his
him
footing.
Having a certain kind of air ball that may have bothered you.
Look, they won the championship, so the past is the past, and I appreciate Danny Green's 10 years as a Laker. So you know, I have to let bygones be
classy.
Bygones.
I like it,
but right, but yeah, man. I guess you know if I don't know. I don't know what feel it. Well, you can always use the Danny Green. You know, I can't say, you know, later into the. You competing for a championship if it'll pay off, but you know if you got them, then you can use them. But it must be they must see it another way in Philadelphia. But now you know they had no choice but to try to ride this thing out, unless they, which I don't see happen, unless they buy him out and surprise everybody. But I can guarantee if you go on the market, then it's gonna be a lot of people, you know, trying to you know get him back. I know we would. I think he'd be eligible to get signed back if he did that. I hope I just didn't start a rumor because that's not anything I heard. I'm just saying. But yeah, we would definitely be clawing back, trying to get him back on the squad as a big wing who can knock down some threes. But yeah, those are my losers, man.
Interesting. The Warriors are also on my list. I also just don't know what they're supposed to do. Like this whole season kind of screwed them with Klay's injury. They had to scramble on the fly to get Kelly Oubre. Jordan Poole is playing better for them. Draymond's trying hard. James Wiseman having moments. He still can't shoot, but guys are scared of him when they drive in. Wiseman is going to help Draymond as he gets older and slower and all that kind of stuff. And just having Draymond as a teacher is going to be huge for him. But like the Warriors not trading that number 2 pick and acquiring Andrew Wiggins for D'Lo is hurting them significantly this season. I wrote about it, like the Wiggins problem of just like, I was taking notes during the Hawks Warriors game last week, and it's just, he was 0-for-2 and nothing midway through the second quarter. And this was, Steph was out, and they just needed buckets, and Jordan Poole is just like driving around the basket and just searching, and no one wants the ball. Like, no one's doing anything. Kelly Oubre is deer in headlights. He was, it's just, that offense, nothing works. Like, it's just a totally different Warriors team than what we've seen. And, like, Steph is just having to do everything. They're playing, like, the Houston James Harden era because they have to. They can't survive. Like, they literally cannot survive offensively in today's game without Steph having a crazy usage and just doing everything. So, for me, I'm like, I don't think they could really done anything at the deadline that would have solved their problems. Like, their problems is they need Klay back. Their problems are they're using James Wiseman as a rookie when they could have potentially gotten someone who could help them now for that number 2 pick. And they're paying a lot of money to Andrew Wiggins to be that guy when Steph or Klay is out to step up. And he is not that player. So I don't think they're an easy fix. And I'm kind of concerned about the end of Steph's prime in Golden State, to be entirely honest. The Pels not doing anything was weird to me. Because we just heard all these rumors, JJ, Lonzo, like that. This is Bledsoe. They just didn't do anything. That blew my mind. Like, I was stunned. David Griffin did not make one move. Were you?
Yeah, I thought Lonzo was definitely gonna be in another jersey after the trade deadline passed, and I thought that he'd be able to uncork, you know, Steven Adams' deal or Bledsoe's deal by maybe attaching Lonzo or maybe Jackson Hayes, maybe the pick that they have this year if they can trade it. I think they had the tools to try to, you know, shake some things up, but, you know, nothing came about on the market. But I think for them, the players that they want to move are just players that nobody wants, and maybe they're trying to hold tight to, you know, what they do have in case a all-star who's in a situation right now that does not look ideal comes on the market in the summertime. Maybe they're just waiting to see if they can, you know, get into that market. But I was very surprised as well that the Pelicans didn't do much.
Yeah. Last thing, and we'll wrap up here, man. Bradley Beal. Teams are circling. Of the list of teams that are lining up to go after Bradley Beal this offseason, what would you do if you're Bradley Beal? What would you do if you're Tommy Shepard and the Wizards?
And the first thing I would do, speaking of all-stars who are in situations that, you know, the direction is in the air, I would sit him down this year. I would have a sincere conversation with him.
Oh, not sit him, not play him. You mean, okay, I thought you meant to shut him down.
Yeah, and a real sit-down. I have him sit down and figure out, you know, what direction he wants to go in. I will show him the moves that we can make and what we can't do. And I'm pretty sure once they lay out what they can't do, that will paint a better picture for Brad Beal. And he strikes me, he's a very loyal guy. And I would see him, I would not see him ever being traded during a season because I don't think he would want to cause that much commotion for a franchise. But I do think that in the summertime when things are a little bit more, you know, like I said, the outlook is clearer for everybody. And you got more options as far as saying, okay, you know, and this, you know, trades are a real thing when it comes to like moving somebody of this magnitude. As far as, hey, do you want to go to New Orleans? Would you like to go to San Francisco? Or what do the Warriors play? Golden State? Do you want to go to Golden State? Would you like to go that way? And, you know, getting things lined up before you're actually able to make a move. But I would certainly sit them down and talk to them and then see. Let them know who's calling. Let them know who's trying to, you know, get them. And then figure out what works for him if he wants to go. And I think the Warriors would be a team that's in the market for him. I think we talked earlier about the Heat would be in the market for him. And I think the Pelicans could get in on it too.
Ooh.
So
Pelicans
would be
interesting. I don't even know. I kind of would. It's so hard. It depends on what Bradley Beal wants. But like my favorite one, I think, is Toronto. Because I think if you keep Kyle Lowry now, and now you have Pascal, and you throw Bradley Beal into this mix, kind of like the Kawhi situation. You just throw him in the Toronto incubator with perhaps the best coach in basketball in Nick Nurse. I am fascinated by what Bradley Beal looks like with those guys. I would love that option. There's not a lot of other ones that really just jump off the page to me. I don't know. When you think about it, it's just... I don't know. There's not a lot that really, really just make me go, do it. I guess the sneaky one that I would 100% do that this market would never do it is Memphis. Just pair Ja and Bradley Beal. They have so many young guys that they cannot pay all these dudes. Like, sell high on all of your draft assets. Like, you've developed these dudes really well. Trade Brooks, trade Jaren Jackson, trade, and just go with Ja and Bradley Beal. That is what I would do. I think that's my favorite, like, under the radar one. It's like Memphis getting involved and just pairing Beal and Morant.
That's beautiful. I would love to see that too.
That'd be great.
That is a good one.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for making the time.
Hey, man. Thank you for inviting me on. I enjoyed it, man. I love to talk shooty hoops, and I can't wait until these next few weeks and see if my guys get healthy, and we're going to get a lot of good basketball going down the stretch. I think the East play-in is going to be amazing. I think the West is going to be good too, but the East play-in tournament is going to be super scrappy, so I can't wait to see that once we get to that. Once we get there.
What can we check out from you on Twitter or anywhere else, man?
Well, I'm going to be doing my regular writing on LakersOutsiders.com, and I also got my pod on Apple, SoundCloud, the Rim Run podcast. I'll be recording something new soon. Right now I'm doing something behind the scenes in a production class, trying to, you know, get my skills right, and I'll be promoting that on my Twitter as usual, on my Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at Hoopay Fiasco. On Facebook, Christopher Jamal Walton. You can find all my links, and I'll be sharing my work. Retweet it, like it, subscribe, leave a comment. Yeah, that's all my stuff, man.
All right, well, go do that. Thank you for the time, my man, and we'll be talking hoops again soon.
Chase, man, take care, man. Stay safe, and looking forward to speaking with you again.
Have you ever said to yourself, I love the fact that I've had the same few pair of sheets since just after college, and I never liked them then, but I just keep washing them every week or two and putting them back on the bed like it's totally normal? Well, stop it. Brooklinen can make that voice in your head and the bad sheets on your bed go away. So, Brooklinen was started by Rich and Vicky, who also tried to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and a leg. And when they couldn't, they founded Brooklinen as the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. They work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without luxury-level markups. Brooklinen has a variety of sheets, colors, patterns, and materials to fit your needs and tastes. Brooklinen has over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. They are so confident that you will love their products, they even offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. And Brooklinen is so much more than sheets. They've got comforters, pillows, towels, even loungewear, and more. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code ChaseT to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more plus free shipping. That is brooklinen.com and enter promo code ChaseT to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more plus free shipping. brooklinen.com and use promo code ChaseT at checkout. All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas podcast, and I am now joined by someone from my home paper, the AJC, Sarah K. Spencer. Sarah, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. The Hawks played last night. They lost last night. They look flat. You're trying to get the head coach fined, I saw. It's a bold move, but I like it.
He actually said that on his own. Hey, I asked about the defense. He brought that up.
So when you look at this West Coast road trip, you look at what the Hawks have been in the last 11, 12 games. Do you think, having watched this team all season, that they have turned the corner and just really figured out who they are as a basketball team?
Well, I think it's possible for them to turn the corner, and I think they've shown that. And I think they have a little bit, especially when you compare it to kind of how they started. They started the season 14-20, and kind of the whole goal of this season that was, you know, publicly stated was to make the playoffs and try and exit the rebuilding phase. And although they showed improvement in that first half, they didn't show enough improvement, you know, for the kind of franchise to be happy with the direction it's going. I don't think they felt like they were moving in the right direction strongly enough. And then you saw, you know, the result of that was kind of a coaching change. And so I think in the second half, they have, obviously they won 8 straight, and they've shown that they're capable of getting wins they need to win. When they were on that 8-game winning streak, it wasn't necessarily against juggernauts of teams. And, you know, they did beat the Lakers without LeBron and AD. But that's kind of the point. The point is that, you know, in the first half of the season, they were losing to teams that they probably shouldn't have lost to because of just some struggles in the fourth quarter. So for the most part, they've cleaned up the fourth quarter. They've lost, I think it's 3 of their last 4 now. So it's not like everything's perfect. But this on this road trip is kind of the toughest part of their season. Grueling 8-game West Coast road trip against multiple teams who are going to be in the playoffs, multiple teams with winning records. So it's not like they were going to go 8-0 on this road trip. You know, they're just kind of trying to scrap as many wins as they can. So as far as if they've turned the corner, I think they've shown that they can. And you're not going to go undefeated. So yes, in a way they are, but there's still some things that they could clean up, if that makes sense. There's still some games where they kind of come out flat. For example, that loss to Denver, where they looked pretty bad defensively, and just, you know, there's going to be those games that are just kind of clunkers. So it's not like everything is going perfectly, but yes, they've certainly shown plenty of improvement. They've shown a lot of potential, and I think that might be the case even more so if they can get a little healthier. DeAndre Hunter has missed, I believe it's two games in a row now with kind of some knee issues. Chris Dunn has yet to make his debut with some knee and ankle issues. So you still haven't seen this Hawks team at full strength. And you also haven't seen it with Lou Williams since they traded Rondo for Williams and some picks and some cash. So I think that this team has a lot of potential, and it's just going to depend on how they kind of put it all together down the, not final stretch, but down the stretch of the second half.
How has Nate McMillan been different than Coach Lloyd Pierce?
You know, he's a little bit more, a lot of the times the guys will, because I've asked the players this a lot, and they'll say he's a little bit more old school. He's just kind of that kind of no nonsense, like more old school coach. It's kind of a bummer of this season in the sense that I haven't been able to meet him in person.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough this season, and not to complain because we're all kind of in the same boat. But you know, it's a bummer when you're covering a coach and you can't even, you know, shake his hand and meet him in person. So I haven't gotten to know him too well yet just because of the circumstances, which hopefully at some point, you know, whether it's playoffs or next season, hopefully we can get back to a little bit of normalcy there. But I think the biggest differences you're seeing on the court under McMillan are, again, for the most part, because they've had some hiccups here or there, but for the most part, the team is executing down the stretch better. Just fewer silly mistakes, fewer miscommunications, and being able to buckle down, get back and guard in the fourth, and come away with more wins than they were in the first half, again, regardless of caliber of opponent. You know, they lost to Cleveland on a wide-open dunk in the final seconds. And, you know, Cleveland's not going to the NBA Finals anytime soon. So, you know, I think that that has been the biggest difference when it comes to McMillan versus Pierce, at least so far. You know, it's still a little bit of a small sample size, but, you know, and I think that it pumped some energy into the team, that 8-game win streak, which came under McMillan. So I think that might have given them a little bit of confidence. And so we'll just have to see what they can do moving forward.
Do you think Bogey is going to be in the starting lineup going forward? Do you think this is something that they want, and this is something that they hope they can stay as the team gets healthier?
I think that's where they would. I mean, that's where he was before he got hurt, for the most part. So I think the initial idea was to pair him with Trey and kind of get another creator out there. So even though Trey Young's always going to be on the ball, you know, have a guy who can be on the ball as well from time to time. So I think that it makes sense, and that's a good pair. That's what we're doing before he got hurt. But I also think there might be a little bit of, not shaking up, but I think there's still a little bit to be figured out when it comes to exactly how minutes are going to break down once everyone gets healthy. Because if this team is healthy, this team's pretty deep. It's just been that they haven't been healthy. So you're kind of seeing different lineups and, you know, different bench lineups and things like that. But I mean, I think that it can work with him in the starting lineup. I think he kind of had to get his legs under him a little bit, coming back from injury. But I also think that it'll be interesting to see how this team uses a guy like Chris Dunn too. Whenever he's able to play, I think he's supposed to be able to play by the end of this West Coast road trip.
Interesting. I'll hold my breath on Chris Dunn. I'll hold my breath, Sarah. I just, we'll see.
As far as when he'll be able to play.
Yeah. And if he's even going to be a factor, if he'll be in the rotation and what he can really do, because now it goes from them not having enough guys to this rotation is getting pretty deep, and playoff rotations typically get smaller, and they need to go down to 8 or 9 guys. And we still just the wild card with Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter coming back. How do you think Nate is going to bring back DeAndre Hunter and Chris Dunn, and maybe even Cam Reddish? Is there a plan? Do you see it all coalescing neatly?
Well, I mean, you just named three guys who are good defensively, mm-hmm. and this team at its worst has defensive problems. So I think even if you have to get a little creative with how you deploy lineups and who you use when, which you're right, as the team gets deeper and deeper, if the team gets deeper and deeper as guys become healthier, you know, it's true. You can't use all those guys all the time, obviously. You have to kind of tighten things up a little bit. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying right now is it's a little hard to exactly predict because you haven't seen them all out there together.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them haven't even been able to practice. So even from, you know, Nate hasn't even seen that in practice because they really don't get practices. When you're playing every other day, you can't scrimmage 5-on-5, you know, for like an hour in that in-between day. Because you're going to wear yourself out, you know, you kind of increase injury risk, and they just simply don't get the practice time. They're traveling, they're testing. It's tough to get everything. It's tough to kind of get your ducks in a row when that's the situation. So it's hard to say exactly how they'll use Chris Dunn because I haven't even seen the guy play yet. Again, haven't met him in person yet either, which sucks. So I think there's certainly times when they could deploy him defensively. You know, he's a big kind of just matchup guy defensively, just throw him out there on a matchup and let him do his thing. There's, of course, questions of how he's going to come back, you know, health-wise, because he's been out for so long. So that might be something more gradual. That might be something where you just see him a few minutes at a time here and there working his way back. That might be something that happens with DeAndre Hunter, too. Who obviously I think he missed 23 games and then came back for two games. And then maybe it was just the increased activity. I'm not a doctor, but now he's got some swelling in his knee. So we'll see when that subsides. But obviously this team is at its best when DeAndre Hunter is kind of at his best. I mean, he was one of the most consistent players, if not the most consistent player on the team before he got hurt. Kind of gives you another guy who can get to his own shot, good defender as well. Cam has been a guy who has struggled with his shot big time this season, but he's still a pretty good defender, and so they're missing that as well. So even though I don't know exactly how those guys will be used in the second half, although I think DeAndre, as soon as you can use him at full force, they will, because of how good he's been playing, because of how much he's improved. So yeah, I think we'll just have to see how those guys look when they come back as well. Because when you're out for a while with injury, it's kind of hard to predict, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's just going to be complicated. And I think this is something that I'm very fascinated because it's just going to be very difficult to keep all these guys happy, especially come playoff time, because some of these guys are just going to be out of the rotation and just going to get DMP CDs and they need reps. And like you said, they're not getting reps in games and they're not going to get reps in practice because they're not doing the scrimmages. So I'm just I'm curious how this is going to work, but I'm going to guess not good. What do you know about Cam Reddish and his Achilles and just how nervous the Hawks are about him right now?
The last I heard, he wasn't really able to do much with contact. I think also Achilles are really tricky. So you don't want to, you don't want to push it at all, you know, mm-hmm. if there's tenderness or swelling or anything like that. Achilles is one of those really, really tricky injuries. And it can also add up, you know, if you have something with your Achilles, sometimes you can be out for a while. So again, I'm not a doctor, but I think that's something that they're being pretty cautious with just because of the nature of Achilles injuries. You know, and the last I heard, he's not doing much with contact yet. That might have changed in the last day or two. But yeah, he's a guy who they're not able to do much with. I'm pretty sure he's just kind of resting and rehabbing right now.
Kind of concerning. Speaking of Cam and John Collins, do you believe that both were really out there at the trade deadline and that there was real possibilities that Lonzo or Marcus Smart could have been had for one of those two pieces?
Well, I mean, you always have conversations about players to figure out kind of value to you, value to the rest of the league. And that's something that Hawks GM Travis Schlenk has addressed quite a bit. You know, of course you have those conversations. And of course, particularly with John, of course they were getting inquiries about that because John is such a talented young player who's, you know, gifted on offense and continues to improve defensively. So he's the kind of guy that a lot of teams would want. So of course they're going to field inquiries in a way, but Schlenk went on the record and said they had no serious conversations about moving John. The word serious carries a lot of weight there. It's because you can have conversations and it not necessarily go anywhere. So, I mean, I'm sure they had conversations, but also John is very valuable to this team. He's also a good fit with this team. I think he might be a better fit this season than maybe some people would have thought, or maybe on paper it would have looked, just because they added Clint Capella and kind of the question was, hey, how are those two guys going to fit? And I think that's a fair question because they do some similar things. But because John shoots threes so well, and because they have played so well together defensively, and they communicate well, they like each other, they get along really well, they're figuring out how to make it work at a pretty high level. So I think John fits well on this team, and I think because of that, I think he is very valuable to the Hawks. And also, there's something to be said with this whole group, really. There's something to be said about right when you hit your stride, do you want to mess too much up?
Mm-hmm.
And GMs look at things from a macro level, obviously. But at the same time, even on a smaller scale, if your goal is to make the playoffs this season and you seem to be making progress toward that goal, do you want to change drastically, you know, the makeup of the team? And the answer was no, they didn't want to do that. And Schlenk was open about that as well. So they ended up making a, I guess, quote unquote, minor move because it wasn't one of their major guys, although I think it has the potential to help them. I have no doubt that they had conversations about players to gauge that value, but that kind of stuff happens all the time. And it doesn't necessarily mean a move is impending, you know? Cause a lot of this stuff kind of comes down to the wire. And at the end of the day, I think the Hawks just didn't want to make any drastic moves considering that they've been playing better lately.
Do you think Collins is an Atlanta Hawk long-term as it stands right now? Do you believe that they are prioritizing him and that both he wants to stay with the Hawks long-term and play with Trey long-term? Or do you think that this is all going to change come the summertime and that if he signs a certain number on an offer sheet from somebody else, that it's unlikely the Hawks match?
Well, I think it's hard to say. I try not to opine too much. I think it's hard to say right now because you just have to wait and see what he's offered when the time comes. There's still a lot of basketball to be played until then. And as far as John, he certainly wants to stay in Atlanta. He's said that several times. He's also spoke a lot. I actually wrote a story about this the other day. He's spoken a ton about how he really values that kind of, I don't know, old school mindset, or maybe just that continuity mindset of really valuing staying at a place, staying with one franchise. You know, I think that's something that's important to him, and I think he wants to stay, yes. I think he wants to, he's kind of been a cornerstone of the rebuild, really. I mean, he's the longest tenured guy on the team. He actually came the year before Trey Young and Kevin Huerter. He's been around for a while. He's been through the rebuild. And now he's kind of starting to build up some success. Not him personally, not that he's just now having success, but as a franchise, they're just now starting to kind of gain a little traction. I think he's said several times that he wants to stay, that, you know, he's invested in Atlanta. And I think the Hawks value him as well. It's just hard to say exactly what's going to happen right now because you don't know exactly what a team is going to offer him. You know, if that makes sense, you kind of have to wait and see how that goes.
Yeah. I'm curious. I'm very fascinated because I don't know how this is going to go. And all my Atlanta friends, we were like in the Atlanta Sports Guys on Fridays. We talk about this. We argue about this, but I'm not sure. I really don't know. I go back and forth on it. There's just something about paying two bigs with Capella still being on the books for 2 years and just Collins and him in the closing fit. And if you can play both those guys in crunch time, in an important playoff series. We're going to find out. That's why I want to see them in the playoffs. I want to see how this works in crunch time against really good teams and in seven-game series. I want to see it.
Well, I mean, exactly. I think that's a good point. I think it's hard to say, and I feel a little silly continuing to say, oh, it's hard to say right now, but you haven't seen this team at full force, nor have you seen this team play those meaningful minutes, even just late in the regular season. You know, forget a playoff series, forget the play-in tournament. You haven't seen this team, you haven't seen games count, you know, really late in the season. And I'm curious to see how they respond to that, you know, and I think it'll be really fun to watch. And I think there's still a lot to gauge with this team as they, you know, if they continue to work toward that. I mean, it seems like they are. It seems like they're starting to gain a little ground. And if they get healthier, again, that might even happen more so. But I think that's going to be really interesting to watch, is how they respond to meaningful games, how they respond to whether it's a playoff series, whether it's the play-in tournament, you know, whatever, wherever they end up falling if they get there. I think that's going to be interesting to see the team's response.
Yeah, I think so too. Last thing, we'll wrap up here, Sarah. Is Trae Young happy?
Is Trae Young happy? I think so.
Okay.
I think he's someone who wants to see. I mean, you'd have to ask him directly about his, you know, day-to-day emotions. I mean, I think overall, I think he's someone who really felt like it was time for the franchise to kind of exit the rebuilding phase and work toward winning. I think that was something that
That's
was
kind of where I was going with this. Is he happy with where they're going and what they're doing? Is he happy with the direction now?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's said that, you know, that this is, I think he has said that basically, you know, actually last March was when Lloyd Pierce first said, you know, that next year, that the next step for us is the playoffs. And players, whether it was Kevin, Trey, John, a lot of players kind of jumped on board saying, you know, yeah, we feel like we're nearing the end of our rebuild. And I think this season, again, even though they didn't start the way that they maybe wanted, I think they are starting to gain some ground toward that goal. So from that perspective, I think, you know, the Hawks as a team are happy with the progress that they're making. But even when they were on that win streak, you know, you can't get cocky with a win streak like that. And they basically said, you know, the win streak is great, but it's not like we're, you know, it's a bigger goal than that. You know, it's a bigger picture than that of trying to make the postseason after, you know, quite a few years of rebuilding and losing at a level that is not fun, and having a roster, you know, particularly the past two seasons, that wasn't built to win. And now you have an improved roster around you, and now you're just able to gain more ground and win more games overall. So I think the Hawks overall are showing progress. I think it's just, you know, can they get healthy? Can they keep it up to the point where they can give themselves a shot in the postseason?
All right. What can we check out from you this week at the AJC, Sarah?
Yeah, AJC.com, just where all my stuff is, all the Hawks content, your heart desires. I'm on Twitter at Sarah_K_Spence. I have a common name, so I kind of have a weird, complex Twitter handle there. But yeah, just right now, just a lot of coverage of the West Coast road trip, which is seems to be going on and on and on and on. And eventually April 4th, they'll be back home and it'll be nice to kind of be in person again. But yeah, right now, just kind of a lot of stories about the direction this team is trending.
All right. Well, keep up the great work. And hopefully things are back to normal so we can get more insight into, you know, who Nate McMillan is as a coffee drinker. What kind of coffee does he like? Is he a big fan of the media interactions at Shoot Around? What does he want? How is he in person? All that great stuff. But anyway, Sarah, thank you so much for the time, and we'll have to check back in again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, everyone. Before we get started, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So, whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports podcasting experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Again, that is bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find more, but that is bwhustle.com/join. All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas Podcast, and I am now joined by someone who has spent the last 24 hours just amazed at Mick Cronin's UCLA Bruins of Bruins Report, Mike Regalado. Mike, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, thank you. How you doing?
I'm good. Did you get much sleep last night?
No. it's funny. I just didn't think that far ahead and think that that I would be working this much late into March. Mm-hmm. But hey, it's all good.
Not a Mick Cronin believer this season, Mike.
I have been. I'm at Bruin Report. I'm a guy that follows the stats, and that's one thing that I've kind of been watching the ride. But what made it interesting this year is the fact that UCLA loses Dacian Nix, point guard, before the season. They lose Chris Smith early in the season. They lose Jalen Hill, their best defender, in early February. Things weren't looking that great, but UCLA was still winning. You know, they had that big loss against USC in early February, but they came back and beat everybody. The problem was, and they've been beating everybody close, the problem was UCLA had played the majority of the conference games were against the teams in the bottom half of the Pac-12. They hadn't really been tested. They didn't play USC. They didn't play Oregon. They beat Colorado, but then they went to Colorado and then they got beat. So at that point it was like, okay, maybe it's all catching up with UCLA, but they never got blown out. They haven't really blown other teams out either, but they've kept it close. And, you know, I thought that they were a decent matchup against Michigan State, but even I was, I'm like, okay, maybe this, you know, it'll be a good first game. And here we are, four games later, four wins, and UCLA is in the Elite Eight.
It's amazing. And I'm sure the NCAA just loves that we're getting Michigan, UCLA, and the Elite Eight. Just things working out on that front. If you had to explain how UCLA is doing this as a whole in the tournament, how would you explain it?
They're just toughing it out. This is a hard-nosed, lunch pail to work type of team.
A classic Mick Cronin staple.
Exactly. And, you know, Bruin fans were used to this with Ben Howland. But then everything went away with Ben Howland. It was a more offensive-oriented team with Steve Elf. And then you have Mick Cronin, who comes in here in his first season. They didn't do so well halfway through last season either, then picked it up and just ran through the Pac-12 conference. This year, you know, similar patterns, but it was really to no fault of UCLA, as I pointed out earlier. You lose two important guys mid-season. You know, how do you bounce back from that? Well, Mick Cronin found a way. He adjusted. He brought in Mac Etienne halfway through the season, a kid that's supposed to be a high school senior right now. He put the ball in Jules hands, Jules Bernard and David Singleton's hands more when Tiger Campbell needed some assistance. And this team just sticks together, and they don't quit. That's the thing. They keep fighting. They keep finding ways to keep the game close. And that's, you know, blowing my mind right now. You know, especially the way that they're doing it. Their scoring margin is 5.3. I think I had it right here, something like it's up to 14 points in these last four games in the NCAA tournament. So not only is UCLA winning, but they're winning better than they did in the regular season. That's astounding to me.
It's fascinating. What were the preseason expectations for this team across the board? What was like the best case scenario when they were looking at what this UCLA team could be in year two of Mick Cronin?
Well, I mean, obviously a lot of people had a lot of high hopes, especially when you return, I think it was like 88% of the scoring production. You know, the Bruins were picked to finish the Pac-12, to finish first in the Pac-12. And, you know, that was pretty good. It was a little rocky to begin with. They had that loss against San Diego State. They lost to Ohio State. I think that was the final game of the conference season. So that was kind of a nice measuring stick. And at that point, it was like, okay, so where are the Bruins now? Well, now they're in the Elite Eight.
They are. I mean, it's just crazy that they're just back, and USC is back, and Oregon State is there, and it's I don't know. We'll get to that in a second. The Alabama game yesterday was bonkers. How mm-hmm. What was your biggest takeaway from the UCLA side from beating Alabama?
It was the fact that they once again Mick Cronin figured out a way to disrupt Alabama. Alabama is a pretty hot hot 3-point shooting team, and they were not in this game. And you know what? It was a weird game of runs too, because UCLA had the lead. It was like a 14-point run Alabama had.
Yeah.
And then the Bruins battled back, and then they take an 11-point lead at halftime, and then Alabama battles back again. It was a roller coaster ride of emotions. And then obviously they go, they head into overtime.
Let's stop before they get to overtime. Minute. Like, why they went to overtime? Because Mick Cronin is just, how much heat is he getting if Alabama wins this game because of the decision to not foul there? Like that?
Yeah. He made a decent point, because if they foul and the Alabama shooter by chance lunges one at half court or beyond the arc, whether he's close enough or not, that's still a foul in the act of shooting. So I get that point, but at the same time, you know, lock him up at the baseline, get that foul, force him to shoot two shots. But yeah, it was coming down to the end there.
It was. USC's there, Oregon State, UCLA. What makes them different for people that have not been able to stay up late and watch these three teams all season? What makes them unique?
They just figure out ways to keep fighting. USC obviously has an uber-talented team with Evan Mobley, a guy who's expected to go 1, 2, or 3 in the NBA draft. Andy Enfield has done a good job putting that roster together. I mean, the fact that they are another team in the Elite Eight, they were close to winning the Pac-12. Oregon State, which came up late in the season, but you know, that's just a beautiful story, because they were, as CBS likes to point out a lot, they were they were chosen to pick to finish last in the Pac-12. But that's the thing too, like you said, you know, not a lot of people stay up late for these games, and nobody's watching what the Pac-12 is. And sure, the Pac-12 was beating up on each other, but there are some good teams. I mean, Oregon's not in there, and I think that was just a weird matchup by the NCAA to not to have two Pac teams go against each other. Still pretty early in the bracket, but you know, obviously one had to come out victorious. Oregon was not that. So now we have three good Pac-12 teams representing the conference in the Elite Eight.
It's crazy. I don't think anybody had this, no matter what you thought about these three different teams, especially not Oregon State, but like just three Pac-12 teams
in the
Elite Eight is pretty bonkers. Do you think Mick Cronin, because UCLA quietly changed ADs, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, there's some real optimism, I think, with Chip Kelly's group at this point. I think they made some progress last year, and I think they might be turning the corner. Mick Cronin did not get a lot of excitement when he was hired. It wasn't a sexy hire. He was like he was not their first choice, for sure. But here he is in the Elite Eight. We saw what happened with the Alford era. We saw what happened at the end of the Howland era. Like, do you think Mick Cronin has a real chance to be the UCLA Bruins basketball coach for a long time?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you see what Ben Howland did. You see how long it took him to do that. Three Final Fours in his first five seasons. So with Bruin fans, especially after Steve Alford, that was kind of a deflating era of coaching. UCLA fans were expecting to, you know, strap in for the long haul. You know, if we get the guy, it has to be, you know, the right fit. And it's also going to take a little bit of time. Well, Cronin has kind of, he's up that schedule. So it's, Bruin fans, I think, are surprised. They, you know, I would say that there were a lot of Bruin fans who really liked the hire, especially seeing what he did at Cincinnati. But not a lot of people, like you said, would have expected this.
Yeah, and also the defense is just not flashy. Like, they're never going to win flashy. It's not going to be aesthetically pleasing, and I just wonder at UCLA, because, like, do you know who plays aesthetically pleasing? USC, like, with the way they play above the rim and everything, and the way Anfield plays. It's a very different style. Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. How do you think this Cinderella run ends for UCLA?
I'm not going to discount anything anymore.
Okay.
not with Mick Cronin. So I do give them a fighting chance, and it's going to be interesting to see two teams who have second-year coaches who have made it to the Elite Eight. Juwan Howard, I think he's done a really, really good job with the Michigan squad. He has. I mean, obviously they're you know, a highly seeded team, and they can't overlook UCLA. I mean, that would be my takeaway. UCLA, I would think, would be fine. Mick Cronin has a game plan. He'll stick to it. Michigan cannot underestimate UCLA. And, you know, that's something I wouldn't have probably never said about a month ago. So
yeah.
it just shows how incredible the Mick Cronin can adjust. You know, oh, we're down a player? Okay, well, let's figure it out. Sure, it takes a couple games, you know, in season. You don't have a couple games in the tournament, but he's figuring it out, and that's the fun part.
All right. Well, Mike, keep up the great work, my friend. Enjoy this week, and hopefully UCLA can keep it going. What can we check out from you this week at Bruins Report?
Just, you know, working on my stats article right now, just quickly looking at what UCLA did, because you know, just really quickly, last point, they didn't have a very good first half. You know, not as great second half, but a really, really efficient overtime on offense and defense. That was pretty impressive to me.
All right, well, keep up the great work, my friend. Oh yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah, and I'll just say, you know, just the normal stuff that we're doing. I actually have to jump on a conference call right now, so that'll be up in Bruin Report Online in a little while. So, yeah, just putting out whatever the Bruins are giving us.
All right. Well, they're giving you grit, it seems like. So expect more of that. All the grit. Thank you so much for making the time, Mike. I greatly appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. Have a good day.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.